So before we start today, I just want to go through a few concepts, just to revise a few concepts which will be necessary to know what we're going to learn. So we're learning a mimer, just to explain to everyone again what a mimer is. We were learning Tanya, but we took a little bit of a break. We'll come back to that probably next term. So a mimer is a Hasidic discourse. So the Rebbes, particularly the Rebbes of Chabad, would say two things. They would say a mimer and say a sichas. So sichas were talks on all different kinds of topics. A mimer was a discourse on Chassidus. It was, right? It was teaching and explaining the concepts of what we call Chassidus, the pnimius of Torah, the inner aspect of Torah, sometimes with a bit of a Kabbalistic angle to it, and so on and so forth. This particular mimer was said by the Rebbe, by the Lubavitch Rebbe, in 1982. And it was based on another mimer of the fifth Chabad Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, whose birthday is the 20th of Cheshvan. So it's on a concept in this week's parsha, but it was based on his teachings in honor of his birthday, sort of thing, right? Now, most mamorim, if you learn a mimer, normally it starts off with a pasuk or with a saying of Chazal, and it explains it and goes. Or sometimes often goes off into a tangent. And explains a concept, explains an idea. Some are longer, some are shorter, some are harder, some are easier. They're all different types. Okay. Now, one idea which I know we've discussed before, but I want to just go through it again so we understand, which I think will just, if I explain it outside beforehand, then it'll be easier to understand the concept in the mind. So, we have this idea that when Hashem created the world, there's in Kabbalah something called Seder Hishtalshlus. Seder Hishtalshlus means that there isn't only this world, there's an evolution of spiritual worlds, divine worlds, godly worlds, right? Essentially, we talk about four worlds. One is called Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. Those are the four famous four divine worlds or spiritual worlds before we get to this physical, mundane world, right? In those four worlds, there's a tremendous difference between the first one, Atzilus, and the next three, called Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. The difference is in the following way, that when Hashem created the world, Hashem is, in his essence, is undefined. Right? You cannot describe Hashem with anything, even in the greatest terms. I mention often the famous machlokes, the famous dispute between the Rambam and the Maharal. So the Rambam, in the beginning of the Rambam, he talks about God's intellect and God's knowledge and so on, right? And he says, don't think that God's knowledge is like our knowledge, it's completely different. Because with us, he says, with human beings, we are divisible. So there's the thinker, there's the thought, the ability to think, and there's the subject which we think about, right? He says, with Hashem, you can't divide it up like that because Hashem is complete oneness. So he says, Hu ha-yodea, hu ha-madev, hu ha-yodua. He is the thinker, he is the thought, he is the subject of thinking. And he says, don't expect to understand it fully because it's talking about God, so we can't really understand it, and so on and so forth, right? That's what the Rambam says with the intention of making great and understanding, trying to give us a glimpse into the infinite greatness of Hashem's knowledge, right? Comes along the Maharal. I'm just explaining this again so we understand in this mimer. So comes along the Maharal and says, I'm not sure why you're talking about God's knowledge altogether. When you talk about knowledge, as infinite as it is and as great as it is and so on and so forth, it's a description of sorts and you can't describe God about anything, right? It's completely undefined, he's above all the description and definition, so why are you talking about his knowledge? So like, okay. So came along the Arizal, and the Arizal, what's the word I'm looking for? Brought together the two opinions, and he says they're both right, right? Well, kind of just for it, yeah, not quite, yeah, yeah. He said they're both right. They're both right, just depends what level you're talking about. So what does that mean? The Maharal is absolutely correct that if you talk about Hashem and his essence, Hashem is completely undefined and indescribable, even on the most infinite and glorious terms, right? However, when Hashem wanted to create a world, and he wanted to have a connection to this world, he desired to create the world with what Kabbalah calls 10 spheres, the 10 powers of creation, similar to the 10 powers of the soul, because our 10 powers of the soul reflect Hashem's spheres. But in order to do that, and that's why each of these four worlds are governed by 10 powers. I'm talking about is Chochmah, Binah, Das, chesed, gvura, yeah, all these things. And but what Hashem did first was, He first decided by choice to reveal within Himself or to manifest Himself in these 10 definitions, right? In His essence, He's completely higher, transcends. Well, that Hashem can be limited if He wants to. Hashem can be infinite or finite because He transcends both, as we've talked about many times. Therefore, Hashem revealed, not created, created means something else, but revealed the world of Atzilus. In fact, the word Atzilus means Eitzel. He is next to, right? Next to. In other words, it's close to Hashem. It's Hashem's spheres. So when we talk about the Chochmah or the Binah of Atzilus, that's Hashem's Chochmah, Hashem's Binah. But, and that's where the Rambam is talking about, I don't think you understand, it's not like our Chochmah, it's Hashem and His wisdom and His thought process are one, and it's infinite, it's totally different to our Chochmah. But it's at that point where the Rambam is talking about. It's not Hashem in His essence. Hashem in His essence transcends Chochmah altogether. You can't even describe Chochmah with Hashem. It doesn't make sense. But when Hashem chose to manifest Himself in 10 spheres, that's the world of Atzilus. In order that, from those 10 spheres, there would be a further, what we call Tzimtzum, a further concealment, a further watering down, a further dilution, and He would create the next three worlds, which is Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya. Bria is one level, Yetzirah is the next level down. I'm not going to go into now the differences between those three worlds, but eventually we come all the way down to it evolves one level into another level, another level, until we come to our world. Okay. This world is also governed by 10 spheres. That's why everything in the creation connects to spheres or a combination of spheres. Just to give you an example, so water connects to Chesed, a fire connects to Gvura, and so on. Okay, so that's one idea. Now, that means like this. When from the beginning of Atzilus starts what we call this concept of Seder Hishtalshus, the chain of worlds, until we get to our world. In other words, from when Hashem revealed this idea of Chochmah of Atzilus, which is the highest level, in other words, the highest world and the highest level, which is the Chochmah of Atzilus, right? From then on begins what we call the system of creation. It's the chain reaction which Hashem put in place to create a world. Right? Is that clear so far? Bearing in mind that Atzilus itself is more God's world, but it's still already the 10 definitions. As we go down the line of Seder Hishtalshus, Hashem also chose, when Hashem created this world, right? Coming out of the, evolving from these various worlds and Seder Hishtalshus, Hashem created a system called nature, Teva, right? Through which He decided that that's how the world would be run. Yeah? And that nature, as the Gemara says, at least for the purpose of this discussion, there are various ways of explaining this, but is very much governed by the mazolos. Mazolos, mazel, right? Now, we're going to have two translations of the word mazel in this maimer. But when we talk about the mazel, normally in the Gemara, when we talk about a mazel, it means a star, a constellation, right? So it starts actually with the angels. The angels are the beginning of this system, and then it evolves into the actual mazolos, the whole system of planets and constellations and the zodiac and so on and so forth, right? Now, let's get one thing very clear. Nothing, the zodiac and the stars and everything, have no autonomy whatsoever, right? That was the mistake where the Rambam explains, that's the mistake how idol worship actually began. Because they understood correctly so, initially, that Hashem sends His hashpah, His influence, His energy, His creative power into the world through the mazolos, through the stars and constellations and the zodiac and so on, right? Which was true. But what they failed to understand was that has to do with the sun and the moon and everything, right? And the way they I don't know, I'm not nothing about astrology, but the way they travel and the way they form with each other and so on, it affects the world. And that's where Hashem decided that would be part of how nature operates. And that's where Hashem sent His creative power through that, right? What the mistake they made was to think that actually the mazolos, the constellation, the stars have some sort of autonomy, and therefore we say, yes, we understand, Hashem is the ultimate boss, but they like middle management, so therefore we should give them some respect, and they started to dive into them, and then they forgot about Hashem altogether, and they thought that's the Avodah Zarah, and idol worship started from there. Okay. So the truth is not like that. The truth is that they have no autonomy whatsoever. It's a system which Hashem put in place, which is the sole source of everything that comes into this world. But He wanted the system of nature to work through that particular system. Okay? Which maybe in a simple way can be explained. That's the source of what we know to be Teva, the routine of nature, the way we know it in this world. Okay. I think that's the introduction of these. Okay. Let's start the actual Maimer. Now what I've done was I've taken excerpts from the Maimer, but I've interspersed it with quotes that he has from the Gemara, because I wanted to do it inside and so that we just know it, we can do it properly. Okay. So the Maimer is based on, again, it's the Maimer of the Rebbe in 1982, based on the Rebbe Rashab's Maimer, the fifth Rebbe's Maimer, in honor of his birthday, which is the 20th of Cheshvan, which is this coming Shabbos. But it's a pasuk from this week's Parsha. So it says in this week's Parsha, we learn about the birth of Yitzchak, right? So it says, V'Hashem pokad es Sarah. Hashem pokad es Sarah. Hashem remembered Sarah, ka'asher Omar, as he had said. V'ya'as Hashem l'Sarah, and Hashem did to Sarah, ka'asher diber, as he had spoken, which means he gave her a child. Okay, we're up the first paragraph, which is number one. That's my numbering. It's just maybe I'll say Baal Yom Holedes. So the birthday Rebbe, in other words, the he calls him the Baal Yom Holedes, which is the Rebbe Rashab. He brings b'ma'amora in his mimer, Hayodua, the famous mimer al pasuk zeh. On this pasuk, sheyotza la'or b'tfus zeh'ato, which had just been printed. This, in other words, 1982. The Rebbe was saying that it's just been printed properly. Masha Omar Azal bi Gemara, something that Chazal say in the Gemara. Now remember, the expression in the pasuk is Hashem pokad, Hashem remembered Sarah. The word pikido means to remember. So let's learn the Gemara. It's a Gemara in Tainis, Daf Ches Amud Beis, 8b. I've copied the article, it's a bit small, so you might need to look with your reading glasses, or close, or whatever. Or take off your glasses, whatever, like me, right? So it's the Hebrew, and I'll just read the Hebrew, but you'll see the English there, the article English there. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara compares there a woman giving birth to a field producing produce. That's the comparison of the Gemara, right? So it says like this. Ne'emar leida be'isha. It says giving birth by a woman. The ne'emar leida b'kshamim, and also the concept of birth is by rain. Rain is the symbol of parnasa, right? It's the source of our sustenance. How do we see this? Ne'emar leida b'isha, it says birth by a woman. As it says in the pasuk, d'chsiv, v'tar v'teled ben, she conceived and she gave birth, v'teled. Right? Teled means she gave birth to a son. That's talking about Sarah. That's by a woman. Ne'emar leida b'kshamim, and it also says birth with rain, d'chsiv, as it's written in the pasuk in Bereshis. When it talks about rain, it says, v'holidah v'hitzmicha. The rain will, Hashem will give birth to the rain, so to speak, and then it will grow. Right? So we see birth by a woman giving birth, and birth by the rain watering the field, essentially. Okay. Then the Gemara continues. V'nemar pekido be'isha. It also uses the phrase of remembering when it came to a woman. V'nemar pekido bakshamim. And it also says the word pekido, remembering by rain. Where do we see this? Ne'emar pekido be'isha, it says remembering by a woman who gives birth. Yichsiv, as it's written in our parsha, in parshas Vayera, Hashem pokad es Sarah, that Hashem remembered Sarah. Ne'emar pekido bakshamim, and it says remembering in the rain. Yichsiv, as it's written, pokadeta ha'aretz v'atashoyke keha. There's a pasuk in Tanakh that says, you remembered the earth and you watered it. So again, same thing. Remembering by a woman to give birth, remembering by the field to give it rain. Okay. Now go to section 3. Back to the Maimer. So he says, a Mavair ba Maimer. So he explains in the Maimer, Hashaychus to Isha la'aretz. What's this connection of a woman giving birth to the field giving produce or having rain? What's the thing? So we know that there's three things that we always pray for, right? It's called Bona, Chaya, Umezoina. Children, sustenance, and life. So children and sustenance essentially is what supports us living, right? So those are the three things. So bona chaya umzoyna, it's Aramaic term. So api masha omer azal, it's according to what Chazal say like this. Chazal say, bona chaya umzoyna. In fact, before we go to three, we'll come back to this. Just have a look at number four. I've actually quoted the Gemara. Gemara in Moed Katan. Look what the Gemara says. Right? The Gemara says like this. Omar Rava, Rava says, you see that? In number four. Bona chaya mizoyna, the length of one's life, number of children, and extent of person's parnasa. Loi bischusa talio milsa, is not dependent on any merit. Elba mazla talio milsa, is dependent on mazl. On the mazolis, on the constellations, on the stars. Right? Fascinating Gemara. We have to understand what it means, because there's lots of questions on this Gemara, as we'll soon see. Right? But the simple reading of the Gemara is that that's exactly what it says, that it's depending on the stars. The Gemara even brings that there were two people, great tzaddikin, the one lived long, the one lived short. It all depends what day you're born. You know, right? That's a simple reading of the Gemara. Okay. Let's go back to the Bible. Let's see again. Number three. It says, what's the connection between the Maimer Ashach, the Ishal Ores, the connection between a woman giving birth, which is the idea of children, to the land giving produce, which is the idea of Parnasal, Pimasha Omrazal, according to what Chazal tell us, Bona Chaye Omezoina, that the children, life and Mezoina, La Beschusa Talia Milsa is not dependent on Schus, Ella Bemazel Talia Milsa, but it's dependent on Mazel. Why does he say that? The Indian bonne, because we talk about children, that's the idea of what the Gemara is referring to. That's the remembering that Hashem remembers the woman, meaning Hashem remembers the woman to give her children. The Indian mizoyna, an idea of sustenance, that's pekidas ha'oretz. That's the idea of remembering the land, right? That's what the Gemara means, that we find pekido, we find remembering by the land, we find remembering by a woman, we find birth by a woman, birth by the land, because they're connected, because it all have to do with sustenance and children, of which the Gemara says in Moed Katan that it's not dependent on schus, it's dependent on the mazel. Alright? Eretz mimena toitzi lechem, because it says like birth is also by this field, because it's a land which produces the bread, alidei hakshamim, through the rain. Okay. So he brings up the Gemara, says in a shneyam tlim mazel, they're both dependent on mazel. So he says like this. This said the Gemara says not dependent on schus. Ella b'mazel. It's not, but it depends on mazel. Maksha b'maimer shom. He asks over there in the maimer. The Rebbe Rashab asks in his maimer. It doesn't make sense. V'halloi omur azal. It says in Chazal, ein mazel liYisrael. That for the Yidden there's no mazel. Yidden are not affected by mazel. Right? Doesn't mean we don't have any mazel. That's not what it means. As some people will try to quote it that way. It's not like, right? Because that's like a Yiddish word. Mazel means luck. No, it doesn't mean that. Ein mazel Yisrael means that we are not governed by mazel. The Yisrael ein lo yesh mazel klal. There's no mazel that governs the Jewish people. We have a different system. V'im kein, therefore, mashayach loimer b'mazel atalya. So how can you say that it's dependent on mazel? The two Gemaras seem to be contradicting each other. He asked one other question there, which I'll go in a second, but before that, just go to the other page. And I want to show you the Gemara where it talks about, it's actually something that is in Rashi, in last week's Parsha, which proves that there's no mazel to the Yid. Let's have a look. It's a Gemara in Shabbos. To be fair, it's actually a machloikas there in the Gemara. It seems to be a little bit of a dispute there in Gemara. But it seems that the accepted opinion is that ain mazel Yisrael. And look how it's presented there. Says the Gemara, the af Rav sover ain mazel Yisrael. Rav, who was one of the greatest Amoraim in the Gemara, he also holds that there's no mazel to the Eden. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, because Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav. Minayin she'ain mazel Yisrael. How do we know that the celestial signs, the zodiac, the stars have no impact on a Jew? How do we know this? From last week's parasha. I just read it 2 days ago. I actually quoted it in my article this week, if you noticed. If Shadem Rez... Yeah, thank you. But this is the Gemara. Very, very, very relevant to now. Shadem Rez, because it says, Vayoytze oysa chutza Hashem took Avram Avinu outside. simple reading of the pasuk, which even Rashi doesn't go by. Rashi brings what we this Gemara that Hashem told Avraham Avinu to go outside, look at the stars, and he said, gaze at the stars. He says, can you count them? Impossible to count. He says, that's how your children are going to be, right? So the simple reading is, why did he tell him to go outside? He says, you look at the stars. Rashi says differently, and he quotes this Gemara. Rashi quotes it more briefly, but the Gemara is a bit longer. Let's see. Amar Avram lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram Avinu said to Hashem, Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, I know I'm not going to have a son. Kod ben beisi yoyrish oisi, my servant will inherit me. Meaning Eliezer. Amar lo ilav. Hashem said, no, that's not true. Ki'im asher yetzim amecha. Actually, someone coming from within you, someone that you will give birth to, will inherit you. Amar lefonov, so he said to Hashem, so Avraham Avinu said to Hashem, it's a beautiful Gemara. Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, nistakalti ba'atzdunigashili, I consulted my astrology. Ve'eini roi lehoili ben, and I am not fit to bear a son. Amar lois, Hashem said to him, go outside. Teim itztadnigashulcha, that's what he meant, go outside. Go outside your astrology, rise above your astrology. She'ein mazal Yisrael, because there's no mazal that governs the Yid. And you're about to become the father of Am Yisrael. Nothing with mazal. Yeah, you're right. The system of nature, the system of mazal, will dictate that you can't have a son. And by the way, Chazal tell us amazing things about Avraham and Sarah. They were both completely, physically, physiologically incapable of having a child. You know that? It was a complete miracle, above nature completely. You know, we have miracles that happen through nature, but this was completely miraculous. They've actually
had... Abraham
was able to have... No, but that was 13 years before.
Oh, okay.
At that stage, they were both completely incapable of having a child. Way past any... That's what the Gemara says. Way past any ability to have a child. Okay? And Avraham Avinu looked at the astrology and confirmed it. That was the case. And he had Yishmol, but that's it. That wasn't going to happen afterwards. He says, no, go out of your astrology. Go out. Why? Ein mazal Yisro. So the Rebbe Rashab asked the question. I looked up the Maimer, actually, the Rebbe's quoting. Actually, it's more lengthy than the Rebbe's Maimer, because he asked another question there, which is important to bring in, because it will give us some understanding of what we're going to learn. So first of all, how can the Gemara in Moed Katan say that children and sustenance are not dependent on schus? Nothing to do with your merit. It's got to do with the mazal, which means it's governed by, like the rest of the world, by the, like Avraham Avinu said, by the astrological signs and the zodiac and the stars and the constellations, the mazales, whereas the Gemara over here says, Ein mazal Yisrael. And saying, well, how can we say, and in general it's a question, how can we say it's not dependent on schus, on merit? Of course it is.
Isn't it also dependent on
Hashgacha Pratis? It comes because we're able to bring about the schus, can bring about Hashem's. Shkoh Paras means just Hashem looks at every detail, but I mean, that could be through the stars also. But it means that Hashem will do things dependent on how we behave. The Torah says, Im b'chukoy saitei lechu, if you go in the ways of the Torah, Hashem will give rain in its right time. If you don't go in the ways of the Torah, Hashem won't. That's what we say in Shema every single day, right? So of course it's dependent on schus. Number one. Number two, we're told to daven. No, but he says not totally on schus, which means it makes a difference if you're a tzaddik or not. That your rain on your children, your pranasa, your children come because of how you wired through astrological signs. What do you mean? We daven every day. We say Baruch Aleinu. We ask Hashem to give us pranasa. We ask Hashem to give us children. We have to give us health, right? These three things, bona chayim zoyna, we ask for it. What are you asking for? It all depends on your star. I mean, work out what day you were born, what hour you were born, as the Gemara says. These things have an impact. Become an expert in astrology like Avraham Avinu, and you'll work out if you're going to have it or not. So what are you davening for? The whole thing doesn't make sense. Okay.
It looks like a big contradiction.
Yeah, it looks like a very... Exactly. So the two Gemaras seem to contradict each other, and the Gemara which says that it depends on mazel seems not to make sense, because it doesn't fit with our normal... What the Torah tells us that about reward and punishment and about schus and about davening, it all doesn't seem to fit in. So like this, we're going to, what the Rebbe Rashab is going to do here, he's going to change the whole meaning of the word mazel. And Well, he'll first explain the second Gemara, which the Gemara says, Ein Mazel Yisrael. We should explain it differently in a deeper interpretation, which will then change the word Mazel. Once you change the word Mazel, it will make sense in the other Gemara. Okay, so like this. Yeah, with me? Mavar ba Maimer, Shomsi explains it then the Maimer. The Masha Omru Ein Mazel Yisrael. This is what it says, that there's no Mazel for the Yid. Hakavona Bazeh. It doesn't mean there's no Mazel. It means like this. The word Ein has to be read as Ayin. Hakavon was there, the intention is, let me translate it and I'll explain it. Shehamazel de Yisrael hu bebechinas ayin shelamayla mishtalshus. We have a mazel, just it's a different mazel. It's a mazel called ayin. Ayin, the word ayin, is the mazel of the yid. Now what's ayin? By the way, this is exactly the same as the Chassidus explains this also in the Pasuk of Tehillim, which we all sing now a lot. Important to know what it means. We say that we cry out to Hashem. We say, "Me'ayin yovoi ezri," from where is my help going to come? Right? Chassidus has a different interpretation there. By the way, when I say different interpretation, it doesn't mean the first one is wrong or right. That's not the point, right? We know that Torah talks us on many, many levels. Sometimes to understand contradictions, you have to go deeper. You have to understand the more esoteric understanding, right? So, of course, in Tehillim, when we say "Me'ayin yovoi ezri," that's a question. That's the simple pshat of the pasuk. I'm asking, where does the help come from? But actually, the pasuk gives the answer also. The same word gives, the same phrase gives the answer. From ayin, that's where your help comes. What is ayin? So ayin is, and that's why I gave the introduction before about Seder Ishtalshus. From when Hashem began the world of Atzilus, that sets in motion a system. Now, that system evolves lower and lower and lower, but it's a system. Once you start with Atzilus, there are definitions. There's a routine, there's a system, there's chokhma, bina, das, things have to make sense, things have to fit into place, right? But Hashem is higher than Seder Ishtalshlus, right? He chose to manifest himself in a defined way to create this world. But he himself transcends Seder Ishtalshlus. What is above Seder Ishtalshlus? What is the revelation of God, Seder Ishtalshlus? We don't know, because something we can't understand, right? It's the infinity of God, the transcendence of God, which is beyond us. Chassidus says that's what's called ayin. Ayin. It's nothingness. You know, I'll explain to you a different way. You know how we always call this world is created yeshma ayin, something from nothing, right? I think I explained this once. First, what does that mean? What do you mean something from nothing? It's not something from nothing. It's something from the real something, which is Hashem, right? So it's a funny word we use. What's it in Latin? I say ex nihilo or something, right? But not that I'm an expert in Latin, but I see in the translation there's noises. So, yeshma ayin, something from nothing. It's not something from nothing. It's something from, if anything, we the nothing. Right? Just say nothing from something. Right? It means like this, that to our eyes, what exists, what's yesh. Existence is what we relate to. The source of existence, the power of creation, the godly creation, something totally beyond us. To us, it's ayin, like it's nothing. We don't know what it is. That's why it's called ayin. Yeah, is that clear? That's very important to this discussion.
So you would say that what happens in the life of the Jew emanates from above.
Correct. But that's what we see. That's what we see. But we have to make sure that we can tap into that. And that's what we're going to talk about soon. All right? See, we can, a Jew has an ability to lock himself into nature if he wants to. Which isn't a clever thing to do, but right? Yeah, Yidden are not governed by nature. Unless we choose to be governed by nature. So I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example just so you understand it. A beautiful explanation that everyone gave about what it says in the Gemara about Purim. Wrong time of the year, but Purim.
But what about the spiritual beings, also from
Ayin
or not?
Yeah, also from Ayin, but different kind of Yeshmaim. So Atzilus talks about different levels of Yeshmaim. But actually, even Chochma of Atzilus comes from Ayin. Because Chochma of Atzilus, which is the greatest level compared to higher than Seder Ishtalshlus, is like infinite, and therefore it's also from Ayin, right? But that's all for now. That's a very, very long explanation. Okay.
Do we believe that it's possible for this whole creation to, I don't want to say disappear, but to get rid of it? I mean, I know that Hashem said that after the flood, he wouldn't destroy everybody, but But could it happen now? So it wouldn't be a flood, it would be something else.
No, Hashem will never control us.
No.
Hashem might destroy parts of it. He might, you know, brings things that to us seem bad, but no. There's a destiny, we know. There's Am Yisrael, there's Mashiach, it's all going to happen. Right? I'll just give you an example so you understand what I mean about what the Yidden are not governed by nature. So, there's a famous Gemara about why Haman was allowed to make his decree. Right? Haman got the king to sign a decree that he was going to destroy the entire Jewish nation. So the Gemara says, how did that come about? Because the Yidden went to the party, the banquet of Achashverosh, right, in the story of Purim, and they enjoyed it, and they relied on it, and therefore, it happened. So the famous question is, I mean, maybe it wasn't the right thing to go, but it wasn't that bad. I mean, come on, like, that kind of avera wasn't so severe that it should warrant a threat of complete annihilation, right? Yeah? The Rebbe says, no. It wasn't even treif. The Medrash says that the banquet is kosher. Mm. Right? Achashverosh was very considerate, very inclusive. For the Yidden, you know, for each community got their best hechsher, it was all good. Right? So what was the problem? The problem was like this. First of all, the problem wasn't that even that they went. Maybe they needed to go. Because when we say that the Yidden are above nature, but we still have to do things through nature, that's what Hashem wants. Right? We have to make the keli, we have to make the vessel. Because Hashem's brachas even to us, which comes from above nature, but we still have to create the keli of nature, the vessel of nature through which it should go. That's because that's why Hashem wants it to go, right? Hashem wants it to happen, right? Okay. The problem with them was like this. The Am Yisrael, the existence of the Jewish people, as we know, we are a famous thing, Kifso ben Shivim Ze'evim, we are a lamb among 70 wolves, right? If you want proof of it, you can open up the media now, you can see, right? But our existence is miraculous. The Yidden forgot that in the time of Purim, right? They thought that their existence depends on the government of the day. So therefore they went to the party and enjoyed the party, they immersed themselves in the party because they thought that was going to make sure that they stay alive, right? Forgetting that that's a complete secondary thing. It might be something you need to do, but that's not what they want to do. Remembering, forgetting that their existence depends only on the supernatural, miraculous existence coming straight from Hashem. Right? So the Rebbe says, Hashem said, no, no problem. You want to rely on nature? See how it works out. It wasn't a reward and punishment thing. It wasn't, you did something wrong, I'm gonna punish you. No. It was, you're choosing your existence to come through nature. Well then, okay. And didn't work out. Haman said, well, if that's the case, Haman hates us, he's gonna kill us. What happened in the story of Purim, they didn't realize their mistake, and they turned to Hashem, realizing it's only going to come from Hashem, higher than nature. And then at the end, when they davened and they fasted, I mean, like that, Esther said, you know, at the end of the 3 days, I'll go to the king, I'll make some sort of natural effort. Yeah, you've got to do that. That's what Hashem wants. Hashem wants to... As I always say, we didn't live in this world, but we're not part of this world. But we live in the world, so therefore we make things go through the world, right? Right? So the same thing with the Yid. So the mazel of the Yid, so that's what the Gemara is saying. Ein mazel Yisrael, there's no mazel for there's no mazel. There's no mazel for a Yid, no. Ein, which means Ayin, the level of Ayin, the level that transcends Seder Ishtalshlus. The infinity of Hashem, which is far beyond nature and far beyond any system that Hashem created in the process of creating the world, that's the mazel of the Yid. That's the mazel of the Yid. Now, you just need to understand, how does the word mazel then translate there? Because mazel normally means a planet or a constellation or the zodiac, that kind of thing, right? So what does the word mazel mean? So mazel has a totally different translation. And we'll soon see there has a translation within a Yid also, because we also have the muzzle of our neshamas, we'll soon see. Muzzle there, the muzzle comes from the word noizel, to drip. So the word muzzle, the way Siddhis interprets the word muzzle in the context of the Jewish people, is that there's the infinity of Hashem which totally transcends creation, and from that level it drips down to us. It transcends us, but it drips down to us. A yid has the ability for that level to muzzle, to noizel, to drip down to where we are. Because we are not up there. We are part of this world. But we connected to that level. And the connection is, it's a little bit like we learned last week, that like the neshama, right? Not the whole neshama comes into the body, but the part of the neshama that remains transcendent is connected to the body. Okay? So he says, let's read this line again. Mavarba Maimer Shams explains in the Maimer, the Masha Omrum Ein Mazel Yisrael. This is what it says, that there's no Mazel to Yisrael. It means something different. HaKavodah B'zeh, the intention is, I mean paragraph 6 over there, right? Sha'am Mazel to Yisrael, what is the Mazel for the Yid? Bebchinas Ayin, it's the Ayin Shalemaylo Mishtal Shalos, which is higher than Ishtal Shalos. Why is it called Ayin? And he says now inside, Hainu Shalagabi Atachtan Ayin Hu. Because in relation to us down here, it's ayin. It's b'chinas metzias nimtzo. It doesn't exist. Like we don't know what it is. V'nikra ayin. It's called ayin al shem she'ena tachta yochel itbos bo, because we cannot grasp it. Afilu lo lehasigo. We cannot understand it. Lavino, and to internalize it. We don't know what it is. So it's ayin. It's far from us. But that's where it comes from. V'azeh omer azal. This is what Chazal say. Bonech. This is what the other gemara is. So the two gemaras fit, right? That the sustenance, the children is not it depends on our mazel, not the mazel of the constellations like the rest of the world. It means the mazel hanal the ayin. It's the mazel of ayin. Shelamaylam yisaydur ishtalshlus. That is higher than Seder Ishtalshlush. Shemimenu nimshoches kol habrochos liYisrael. That's where all the brochas to the Yidden come. Bebona chayim zoyna, with life, children, and sustenance. Okay. Now, you have to understand one part still, right? Because the Gemara said, the Gemara didn't just say that it's tolly in mazel. It says it's not tolly in schus. So what does it mean? It's just going to come? Right? So what if you understand like this? What it means, it's not dependent on the schus and the merit. It means it does not depend on the merit in a certain level. But of course it depends on us. And of course it depends on our davening. And of course it depends on all that. But what? So what the Rebbe explains in his Maimer is the following. That in order for us to really access that mazel, in other words, a yid is not governed by nature. A yid is governed from higher nature. It's governed by ayin. Our mazel is ayin. Ayin is the mazel for Israel. Or like it says, Tilim, where's our help going to come from? Me ayin yovei ezri. The help will come from ayin. Right? And that's what it means. It's totally on mazel, because that's the mazel we're talking about. However, for us to really access that mazel, to bring it down, for us to be able to be the recipient of the flow that's going to drip down from that mazel, we have to tap into our own mazel, the mazel of the neshama. And that's what he's going to explain now. In order to explain this, it's like this. First, we have to understand what does the mazel of the neshama mean. So we explained last week a little bit, but let's explain it again just briefly. That the neshama has five levels. The neshama is one with Hashem and has five levels. We're talking about the godly soul now, right? We have the three conscious levels. Those are the three levels, nefesh, ruach, neshama, the godly thought, the godly intellect, the godly emotion, the godly behavior. That's a part of the neshama that comes into the body. But part of the neshama, which is like the subconscious, or even more than that, the yechida, which is the fifth level, the pintaliyid, the real crux of the neshama that's one with Hashem, that remains transcendent, remains outside of our body, but is connected to us. In other words, that neshama, that part of the neshama, yechida, has a connection to the neshama that's within us, and sometimes it's called the muzzle of the neshama, because also there's a dripping down from that level of the neshama to our neshama, which is more conscious, and we get affected. So he brings the Gemara to demonstrate that. I'll show you. Have a look at number 7. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, page 94a. And it talks about, I'll just give you the context, talks about Daniel. Daniel was the great Daniel, right? Who lived in Bavel. Daniel, yeah? And he was a Novi. There's all conversation there about Nevi'im and greatness and greatness in prophecy and greatness in knowledge. Anyway, bottom line is that it says there that Daniel was greater than three other prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Right? What's it based on? It's based on a story that there was a banquet. And there was a banquet where where Daniel was present, and so was the other three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. And suddenly in that banquet, I don't remember the exact details of the story, but it's a Tanakh story, where Daniel suddenly saw a vision. He saw some signs from Hashem, because he was at a very great level. And Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi didn't see it. But yet they got a fright. They became scared. Right? Okay, so have a look at the Gemara. Gemara says like this. V'chi ma'achar d'lo yichozu. Says the Gemara, now since they, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, did not see the signs, my time iba'us, so why did they get frightened? Says the Gemara. Gemara answers. Right, they didn't see the vision, but they got frightened. Says the Gemara, because afogav de'inu loichazi, because even though they didn't see, midi, they didn't see anything, mazlayu chazi, their muzzle saw. What does it mean, their muzzle saw? The muzzle saw, Chassidus explains that it means the part of the neshama that's not in their body. So consciously, they didn't see it. Daniel, who even his conscious part of the neshama was a very high level, he was able to see it. They didn't see it because their conscious neshama, the part of the neshama that was in them, wasn't high enough to witness that vision. The frequency of that vision didn't fit into the frequency of their neshama. But their mazel saw it, the transcendent part of the neshama saw it. And it's called mazel because sometimes things happen in the mazel of our neshama and there's a dripping down, there's a leak from the mazel of our neshama into our conscious neshama and has an effect. And therefore they got frightened because the mazel of neshama sent a signal to their conscious neshama. Okay. Let's bring that in to show what's the muzzle of the neshama. So just like there's an ayin of the world, there's a muzzle of the world, which is the ayin, and that's the muzzle of the id, the ayin of Hashem, in other words, the part that's transcendent, that's we cannot grasp. So too, there's a muzzle of the neshama, the part that's not conscious, the part that's not in our thing. And we have to tap into that. So let's turn over the page. And now, just a mind, remember, I'm just highlighting the part we can learn inside. So it's like this. V'hine. The Rebbe says that from the lengthy explanation of the Maimer that I'm quoting from the fifth Rebbe, from the Rebbe Rashab, move on, it's understood like this. Even those parts of our life that is completely dependent on the mazel, and not the constellation's mazel, but the real mazel, the transcendent mazel, they also come down and they also are manifest in this world through us serving Hashem. It doesn't just come from the mazel. We need to make sure that it comes from the mazel. We need to tap into the mazel. We do need avoida, which answers the question that Gemara seemed to contradict all the stuff that we learned about this, right? So we say, no, our mazel is ayin, but to tap into that mazel, to get the flow from that mazel, there's a certain avoida Hashem that we need to do. And what is that? Like this. What service of Hashem connects to mazel? Right? Let me explain outside. We know that when we say Shema every day, I'm talking about the first paragraph of Shema, we read that you should serve Hashem your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your... There's lots of translations. The word mo'idech, okay. Might, resources. We'll see. I'm going to do a different translation, okay? So, we have in our neshama reflects, it's like a microcosm of the whole Seder Hishtalshlus of Hashem, right? Our godly soul is like a bit of a glimpse, it's a snapshot of the whole Seder Hishtalshlus, right? So the part of us that's more conscious, the part of our neshama that's more conscious, which are the 10 powers of our neshama, which reflect, say, the Hishtalshlus, they reflect the 10 spheres of Hashem. So we have Achochma bin Adas of our neshama, Achesed, Agvura, the love of Hashem, the fear of Hashem, and so on and so forth. That's like the say, the Hishtalshlus of us, right? The part of our neshama that's transcendent, that's the muzzle of our neshama. That's like the ayin of our neshama. Right? It's the transcendent part, the part that's beyond us. Now, we can serve Hashem in different ways. We can serve Hashem when we are inspired by the conscious part of our neshama. Even that's a very high level of serving Hashem, right? But nevertheless, it's inspired by the more conscious part of the neshama. Or we can serve Hashem by connecting to the muzzle of the neshama. What does that mean? So I'll just explain outside a little bit and we'll do it inside. So it explains many places like this. That when we serve Hashem, which we're supposed to, there's a part of, that part of how we serve Hashem, which is conscious service, which means thinking about Hashem, learning about Hashem, understanding it, internalizing, getting passionate about that, developing a love for Hashem, developing a fear of Hashem, and then putting it into practice. That's b'chol levavcho v'chol nafshecho. Right? Where we serve Hashem with our heart, with our soul, in other words, we put everything that we have consciously into it. Right? Levavcho means our midas, our emotions, chesed, wirat, tiferes, how do we do that? And that can be a very high level. It's not easy to reach a level of love of Hashem, fear of Hashem. However, at the end of the day, that level is still has some description to it. It's still limited, right? It doesn't come to b'chol mo'idecha. What's b'chol mo'idecha? B'chol mo'idecha is the concept of mesiris nefesh, self-sacrifice, being ready to completely surrender to Hashem, even when it doesn't make sense, to go beyond ourselves. In other words, complete bittul, basically. Complete bittul, which is, it's hard to translate bittul, nullification, surrender, complete giving ourselves over, going beyond ourselves. In other words, when a person serves Hashem, it's a rational service to Hashem, even at a very high level, it's still the person. It's still the conscious person. Right? And the conscious person means that were there to be a threat that threatens that service of Hashem, it is possible that the person won't withstand the test. Right? So, you know, maybe this is a good way to explain it because it's in this week's parasha, right? One of the things that's amazing about this week's parasha is the 10th test of Avraham Avinu, which is the Akedah. Right? Akedah. Hashem was called, Avraham Avinu was called upon to sacrifice his only son. Right? Which is a tremendous sacrifice. And he was ready to do it. Right? And we say that's the biggest test, and we may have mileage out of this. Every tefillah we dive in every single day, we remember the Akedah. We don't stop, right? This Akedah has been used big time. So that's your question. What happened to the first test of Avraham Avinu? The very first test of Avraham Avinu was he came to Nimrod, and Nimrod was an idol worshipper, and the whole story with Terach, and Nimrod said, "Do you believe in God? Do you believe in idols? I believe in God." He says, "Okay, I'm going to throw him into the furnace." He says, "No problem, throw me in." And he threw him in. That wasn't self-sacrifice. What's the difference between, even that was mesiras nefesh, right? What's the difference between jumping into the furnace and the Akedah?
That God commanded the Akedah, but he didn't command.
Ah, but that could make the first one even better.
Yeah,
agree. Right? Akedah, he gets commanded to do it, right?
Yeah.
They did it voluntarily. I mean, this is something what you're saying, but I'm just saying, in terms of the discussion, right? Okay. The answer is like this. The Mesiris Nefesh of the Akedah was complete Jewish Mesiris Nefesh, which is only possible for a Yid. A non-Jew could also have Mesiris Nefesh, but only like the first one. What does it mean? Avraham Avinu discovered monotheism, right? He discovered monotheism. And he came to the point with great thinking and great discovery that the world has no purpose other than believing in Hashem, right? So he came to quite a high level of Amunah, but at the end of the day was a rational Amunah. Very high rational, very strong rational Amunah, right? For which he was even willing to give up his life because he came to the point that life is not worth living unless you serve Hashem, right? Unless you believe in Hashem. So, do I believe in idols? No. I believe in God? Yes. You're willing to die for it? Yes. Now, I'm not belittling that level of a test, right? It's unbelievable he gave up his life for it. But, at the end of the day, it was still him. When Avraham Avinu became the first Yid, which we talked about last week, which is Lech Lecha, when Hashem gave him the first mitzvah, and he was granted the Jewish soul, Jewish soul has an emunah, has a belief in Hashem that is not rational. That we have belief in Hashem as we what's explained in great length, that it's like we've seen it and we are it. Because the belief that comes from the deepest level of the neshama, which is the yechida, is not a belief that I believe in something, it's a belief because I am that something. I'm totally one with Hashem. Now let's go back to the Akedah. The Akedah was a belief system that made no sense. It was an irrational belief. When Hashem told Avraham Avinu to take Yitzchak with the Akedah, it went against everything that Avraham Avinu had ever lived for. Because imagine this, right? Imagine Avraham Avinu, he spent his whole life making this huge Kiruv movement of getting everyone to believe in Hashem, right? Big academies, and he's bringing everyone closer. Then suddenly disappears one day and he comes back without his son. Everyone asks him, what is that? I slaughtered him on the Mizbech. Why'd you do that? God told me to. That would have been the worst thing for business. Right? That's the God you've been teaching us? That's the God you spent your whole life teaching us about? Right? So Avraham Avinu knew that going to the Akedah is going to be giving up everything that he lived for and believed in. It made absolutely no sense. Hashem had promised him a child, and I told him to sacrifice the child, and that child hadn't got married yet. That's Mesiras Nefesh. Well, it doesn't make any sense to you. It was going beyond himself. The first Mesiras Nefesh was still himself. Had he been at that level and Hashem told him to sacrifice his son then, maybe he wouldn't have listened. Because then it would have threatened his whole... At the end of the day, the biggest proof that Hashem exists, but it's still a proof, it's still intellectual, it's still rational. So if some greater force can come and dismantle the rationality, it might fall apart. There's some, you know. Real Mesiras Nefesh means that I'm so connected to Hashem that there's no questions. Hashem says, jump, I jump. Hashem says, take my son and swallow it. Makes sense, doesn't make sense, I do it. Right? Now, Mesiras Nefesh, we're not called upon to give up our children, Baruch Hashem. But we're also supposed to have Mesiras Nefesh. We've talked about this before. Every generation has a different form of Mesiras Nefesh. The Yidden in Russia, when they were threatened by communism, some people almost gave up their life to keep Torah mitzvahs, okay? That's another form of Mesiras Nefesh, right? Yidden in the Holocaust risked their lives to hear Shofar Rosh Hashanah, right? What's our Mesiras Nefesh living in comfortable Sydney, right? Mesiras Nefesh is B'chol Moedecha, the third part of Shema. B'chol Moedecha means to go beyond yourself. That's because there can be a glimpse of Mesiras, maybe it's not the same Mesiras Nefesh, but it's a taste of Mesiras Nefesh. In other words, we can understand and things can talk to us, and the way modern society works is that you only do things that relate to you and talk to you and resonate with you and all that kind of stuff. Right? Because what is the translation of the word b'chol mo'idecha? B'chol mo'idecha means, the word mo'id in Hebrew means very. Right? Very. Now, it's a noun really. It's not like very much, right? But the Torah conjugates that word mo'id. It says mo'idecha, you're very. What does it mean, you're very? A bit more than you think you can. A bit more than you understand. In other words, we come to the mindset at least. Maybe we don't feel the way the Yidden felt in Russia, Yidden felt in Purim time, but we get to the mindset of Mesiras Nefesh, we tap in, that we not only serve Hashem with our heart and our soul, things we understand, even at the highest level, but we go beyond ourselves, each person according to them. Each person says, you know, there's something that I don't like doing and I'm going to do it. That's Mesiras Nefesh. To engage in serving Hashem by going beyond ourselves. What does that mean, going beyond ourselves? Tapping into the muzzle of the neshama. Because as long as we tap into the first three levels of the neshama, that's still us. It might be very high level. We might be so excited about Shabbos and davening, and because we've learned about it and understood it, we should do that. Because we're supposed to serve Hashem with all parts of our neshama. But also we have to go to the level of muzzle. Muzzle means the muzzle of the neshama, the yichida. To say, you know, this thing I really don't like. And that's what I'm going to do. Right, it's a bracha. When we find a mitzvah we don't like doing, that's an opportunity. We have to try to like doing everything, but when we find a mitzvah, that's Kabbalah Sora. It's Mesiras Nefesh. We find something we don't like doing, that's what we got to do. That's an opportunity to tap into B'chol Moedecha, and that's the Avodah. That's the Avodah of mazel. And that's the, and that when you do that avodah of mazel, oh, we'll just do it outside because it's getting late, that's how we tap into the mazel of the ayin, and that's when the bracha comes from higher than nature. Right? And then he says a beautiful thing, I was going to just bring it in because I don't want to leave it out because it's such an important part, concept which is so relevant to now. He says there's another part where the mazel expresses itself. So one is about how do we tap into the mazel of our neshama? One is this mesiras nefesh adi, l'serving Hashem b'chol v'yedecha. The second way is through unity, oneness. Why? Because on the conscious level of the neshama, we're all different. That's where difference shows up. How do we become one? By tapping into the m'oidecha, the mazel of the neshama. Because the mazel of the neshama is that pintalayid, it's that source, it's that spark of Hashem within us, where everyone is the same. So when we serve Hashem b'chol ma'idecha, it's got to lead to oneness. It's got to lead to complete unity. Because all comes to the same place. That level, the ayin is the same ayin. It's the same thing. Tanya says that. The origin of the Shema is one with Hashem. It's everyone's origin is the same. It's how it manifests itself. So my chesed is different to your chesed, okay? My avoid is more chesed, your avoid is more gvura, maybe, whatever, that's different, right? But at the pinta layid stage, at the yichidu, at the mazel of the neshama, all one.
There's no different.
No. Mazel is the oneness. It comes from the ayin. It comes from the oneness of Hashem. The indivisibility of Hashem. So therefore, if we're trying to serve Hashem b'chol moedecha, one of the ways it manifests itself, number one, in our own avoid is Hashem, to go beyond ourselves, mesiris nefesh, moedecha, your very. The other one is manifest self and being one. And when being one, that brings the muzzle of the neshama, the muzzle of Hashem. So yes, ain muzzle Yisrael. There's no muzzle, meaning that the ayin is the muzzle. When the Gemara says that everything is the life and children are dependent on muzzle, it means the muzzle of the muzzle, the infinite muzzle, the supernatural muzzle. A yid is governed by muzzle, but we have to tap into it by tapping into the muzzle of our neshama, and that's how we tap into the muzzle of Hashem. Since now the Yidden are amazingly united, so therefore now it's time for Hashem to reveal the ayin and to send us all the brachas.
It's a little bit superficial, but I think it takes me to the same thing. I've been so surprised by having my colleagues who don't understand why this is affecting me so much. Because we're all one, and
yeah,
many
yeah.
people, it just doesn't make sense. It's like there, it's, I know you're Jewish, but like,
Correct. So essentially, we are one people. Now it's just coming out, but you know, sometimes not so revealed. That's the problem, right? But now it's revealed. Yeah, 100%. 100%. 100%. Exactly. Okay.